Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
The moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
The internet can be your window to the world, or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.
This is Kevin Conroy, and I know that this week in Geek can't handle the goddamn Batman.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame death party!
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Yes, I always say, yes. I always say,
no.
I always say,
dum dum,
lippity dum.
What's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek. I am your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. And as you may notice, I am flying solo this week. That's right. I do not have Mr. Christopher, a.k.a. Tristan, with me, nor do I have Alex the producer with me. No, this week is actually just a comedy of errors, if you will. And that's kind of why I'm flying solo this week. Tristan had to take a little bit of time off, just kind of needed a little bit of a break from the show. And that's okay. Should be back next week. Alex had to take a break from the show this week, mostly due to our car being screwed up. Hopefully we're going to get that all fixed out tomorrow, and we should have more people back for next week. So this is kind of a throwback show, kind of how I used to do the show a couple of years ago when it was just me doing it as a flying solo bit on the Nerd News Network. So today will kind of be a throwback to that. However, we do still have a lot of elements and fun for you, as I typically do on this show. So a couple of housekeeping announcements to kind of bring up the speed. We should have a new Turd or Treasure coming up. I have been reviewing a couple of different titles. I just reviewed 12 Horses from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. I did Game Night, which is another movie. I'm working on State of Decay from Microsoft, I think, did that. Or that's where I got the code from anyway. So I'm going to be digging into that later on today, such as it was. And if you're listening to this in America, happy Memorial Day. So hopefully you're having a safe and fun time being out there barbecuing with your family, just having sit-down drinks or a couple of Wobbly Pops with your friends. And I really sincerely hope you're having fun this weekend. Other housekeeping announcements. Our other project via Terrible Warriors, The Cambridge Chronicles Season 1. Is coming to an end rather soon. There's only two story episodes left in our arc where we set things off in Faerun, where we're basically trying to stop this dark goddess from destroying essentially the universe with a couple of level 7 characters. Yeah, I'm not having them punch above their weight class at all, as you can imagine. And we're setting things up to do things with a new game in a couple of weeks, so be stay tuned for that. Other than that, me and Alex are still planning on doing a few more Twig DVD commentaries via YouTube. Hopefully you've been enjoying those. Once again, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can give us a email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Definitely look forward to hearing from you. Or you can try our voicemail line, which I'm about 95% sure is working, and that number is 817-717-7202. But coming up on the show this week, we have the usual gaggle of reviews. I'm actually going to be looking at a really cool Bluetooth speaker, which I got from Famtech. Now, you may notice that Element does seem a tiny bit out of place. That's because originally it was supposed to go into Future Imperfect, but I decided to put it into this show in particular just so I can get the coverage out there and make sure that everybody is happy, as you can get this speaker everywhere now. We're also going to be doing Satan's Pantry, as we often do. Not quite sure what we're taking a look at this week. And we also have a review from Alex for Shanti, the Half-Genie Hero, which is a game I've actually wanted to get for quite some time, so we'll have to see what Alex has to say. And we actually have something really special this week. I actually had a chance to sit down with a former editor from Marvel Comics, Ann Nocenti, and we're going to talk about the MCU, some of the other heroes. She's created characters like Mojo and Longshot, Typhoid Mary, etc., etc., and we're going to talk with her a little bit later in the show. So without any further ado, we're going to throw things over to myself and this Element you will hear in Star Trek Future Imperfect, which is our Star Trek show. So, Birdman, if you will, take it away. We'll be back right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity. Welcome to The Replicator. I am Captain Mike the Birdman Dodd. And today on The Replicator, we're taking a look at something kind of cool. Coming to us from Famtech, we are looking at Star Trek, the Next Generation Bluetooth speaker, which happens to look like the USS Enterprise NCC-1701-D. That's right, Captain Picard's good old Enterprise from Star Trek The Next Generation fame. And this is a Bluetooth speaker that is actually kind of cool. Obviously, being officially licensed, which means it has all the detail you come to expect. More highly detailed than, say, the Playmates 1994 toy of the Enterprise. But not exactly studio scale. This thing is probably a little less than 12 inches, but it sits pretty nice. It displays relatively well. So what this thing includes, it gives you sound clips of the warp drive, an engine hum, torpedo, auto-destruct, incoming transmission. Now, it's also a Bluetooth phone, or a Bluetooth speaker, rather. It means it can connect to your phone, your tablet, or even your PC. One of the neat things about this is actually a white noise generator as well. So if you have trouble sleeping like me, you can fall asleep to the sound of the engine hum. If you go on YouTube, there's people that have done the similar thing where they just have main engineering as the sound. But if you can fall asleep to the engine hum from the Enterprise, that's just as comforting and a little piece of sci-fi future here and now. Now, the cool thing is this thing also lights up, and this thing is bright. The warp nacelles light up, the main deflector dish lights up, it's cool. Now if you press the bridge itself on top of the Enterprise, it'll actually make sounds, which you can do that in kind of demo mode and whatnot. Now I did have two problems with this thing. I did have trouble syncing it up the first time to my iPad because I had to have it put into Bluetooth detection mode. So after fiddling with the power settings for a couple of minutes, basically holding it down, pressing it a couple of times, eventually I was just able to fiddle with it and it happened. It'll show up on your Bluetooth capable device as NCC-10701-D. It shows up as the Enterprise, basically, and it'll connect. Now, this thing has a built-in USB rechargeable battery with a purported 8-hour life. I've been testing this thing for a little over 2 weeks now, and I would argue I get between 4 and 6 hours. So I don't know whether I'm not charging it long enough or whether my particular unit just won't last that long. I mean, either way, if you pull this thing out as a white noise generator, the white noise only lasts for 60 minutes anyway. Or if you're listening to music in your room, you're probably not going to be listening it for a full 8 hours, give or take. Though they do recommend not having this thing plugged in at the same time and using it. So please advise that little bit of caution. I was able to get fairly decent range out of this thing. I was able to go right across my apartment with my iPad and not lose Bluetooth connectivity as I was listening to the streaming app for WMMR, which is a radio station out of Philadelphia, and I never once lost connectivity. So this thing retails for about $80 USD on ThinkGeek.com, and you're asking, is that worth it? Well, you're getting a fairly decent quality Bluetooth speaker. It's loud, it's crystal clear, and it's a licensed Star Trek collectible. So you're paying probably about $60 for the speaker itself and $20 for the license. And it is a pretty cool piece of memorabilia to have in your office. And the fact that it can be a covert speaker, which means this thing can sit on a shelf above your desk, above your computer, and you can just connect it to Spotify or any streaming app or whatever, and it works beautifully. So that is my review of the Star Trek The Next Generation Enterprise D Bluetooth speaker coming to us from FameTech. You should probably check it out. Now throwing things back to Admiral Stephen Phillips right here on Future Imperfect.
News on the march!
Welcome back to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. And that was my review of the FameTech Star Trek The Next Generation Bluetooth speaker. Now, you can find this thing on Amazon or ThinkGeek, or pretty much wherever fine products like Star Trek are sold. And I did find out that if you turn off the LED lights, the battery life is significantly better. I just like having this thing lighting up my living room at night. It looks cool. So anyway, we're going to throw things over to myself and the news, such as it was, that happened in the world this week of Geek, Dork, Dweeb, and Goofus. And one of the big stories that happened this week, as you know, Solo has just opened up in the theaters around the world this past week. And of course, it tells the story of Han Solo's early days from Corellia to, I'm not quite sure because I haven't seen it just yet, but rest assured, I will see it. However, that's not the only thing that's happening in the world of Star Wars this past week. The guy who directed Logan, James Mangold, is supposed to be set to write and direct the Boba Fett movie. Now, this guy has also done some pretty amazing things. He did The Wolverine. He also did Walk the Line. And he did the remake of 310 to Yuma. Now, originally, the guys who were going to work on this was the guy who did Chronicle, which was Josh Trank, and the X-Men Days of Future Past writer-producer Simon Kinberg were supposed to work on this movie. However, they had to leave for whatever reason. So now that we're getting Logan director James Mangold to write and direct this Boba Fett movie, which is sort of following this whole Star Wars stories line of films. Like I said, we've had Star Wars Rogue One, which I think is underappreciated. I really like Rogue One. And Solo, I haven't had a chance to see it, but I have read the plot summary. And you know what? I'm okay. Also, since I'm doing the show, I really have to apologize to Tristan because I accidentally spoiled this in our producers chat, where we typically just kind of go back and forth and talk about how the show's going to be developed each week. And I kind of let slip a major spoiler, so don't I feel like a douchebag? But no, having a Boba Fett movie is something that a lot of the Star Wars fan community has always wanted in some capacity, because we've seen Boba Fett expanded upon in the Star Wars Expanded Universe fiction. He's been a big character in the video games. He's almost always a boss character at some point. We had the Jango Fett video game a number of years ago. I'm pretty sure that Star Wars 1313 was supposed to have Boba Fett involved in some capacity. And having a Boba Fett movie would be cool. I just don't know who they'd cast. Now, Daniel Logan, who played young Boba in Attack of the Clones, and I think returned to voice him in the Clone Wars series. Don't quote me on that. Or Rebels, I think it was. I'm not sure. I don't know whether he could hold a feature by himself. However, having a cameo would be really cool. Having all the clones look like him or Temuera Morrison, if depending on when they set this movie. And a lot of people are saying Temuera Morrison's too old to hold it. Now, if you had Temuera Morrison return to voice Boba Fett in the helmet, that would be cool. In fact, one of the coolest things I saw is someone said, if you're going to make this movie, make the movie like Dread, where literally Boba Fett's not the main character. He never takes off his helmet. So if you did like a crime movie and you had Boba Fett sort of be like Judge Dredd and just never takes off his helmet, always talks, and there's another character who's the one that the audience relates to, now that could be something. And I think you could pull something off significantly cool with that. So you know what? I'm pretty excited for the Boba Fett movie. Now, they're also talking about doing an Obi-Wan movie, which will be a direct tie-in to Episode 4, which someone else pointed this out on Twitter. Like, okay, as cool as these Star Wars stories movies are, we need to stop talking about the same two-week movie period that basically happens before Episode 4. Like, they've mentioned the Princess Leia movie, her doing Imperial Court intrigue, getting ready to steal the Death Star plans, being a spy for the Rebels. I think that's a story that should be told. There's probably some really cool stuff in there, because we know Leia is very, very capable in these movies, and especially in the wake of Carrie Fisher's death, I think that'd be kind of nice to have a movie dedicated to her memory, and just seeing who could potentially step into that role. The movie I want, outside of Boba Fett, is I would love a war movie with a group of clone commandos. Kind of like Republic Commando, except like Band of Brothers or something like that. That'd be something I'd love to see. I want to get away from Jedi. As cool as it would be to see Knights of the Old Republic, you'd have to do a lot of universe setup. I think people are willing to accept from episodes 1 to 8 now. They know that timeline. So, I don't know. Just kind of spitballing, or everyone would love to see this, but now the actors are too old, Shadows of the Empire, which was a fantastic novel in 1996, or maybe the Thrawn trilogy, but now I'm just pie in the sky, we're just talking here. Okay, so this is, to change tones from Star Wars, this is something a little bit more serious. This is something that caught my eye earlier this week. This story comes to us via Kotaku. Earlier this week, a game had appeared on Steam called Active Shooter, which is and what this game is you play as a shooter, be it a SWAT team member trying to neutralize them, a civilian, or a school shooter in a dynamic SWAT simulator. The trailer depicts a player running down a school hallway and through classrooms, indiscriminately murdering teachers until a SWAT team shows up. Now, complaints about this game have been pretty hardcore. Yesterday, or as of this story being published a couple days ago, the person behind the game has said they'll probably remove the option to play as the mass shooter. One of the reviews on Steam went to say, I love offensive humor as much as the next guy, but you're dense as hell if you can't see why a pay-to-play school shooting simulator game might be taking it a step too far. Another person said, report this game. So, yeah. This has been one of those things. The anti-gun violence charity InfraTrust has called for Valve, the Valve Steam where this game is currently available, is calling for them to remove Active Shooter from Steam altogether. It is horrendous, a spokesperson told the BBC. Why would anybody think it's a good idea to market something violent like that and completely insensitive to the deaths of so many children? And I'm going to say this. Gun violence is a problem. It's a huge problem. And there was another school shooting in Indiana on Friday, I believe it was. And I went on a bit of a rant on Facebook, and I wrote, it's kind of fucked up how kids go to school these days, especially post-Columbine, post-Virginia Tech. post Parkland, and kids expect this. And I wrote, this is not normal. And I had another person on Facebook say, you know what, Mike, this isn't normal. I'm like, you're fucking right it is. There's a school shooting. Like, it gets buried in the news these days because it happens so bloody often. And there's a John Stewart gif or a meme out there where it says, you know what, the day to talk about gun violence is not tomorrow. It's right fucking now. And Second Amendment rights and all that shit, whatever. Yes, you should have the right to protect yourself. Yes, you should have the right to protect your family. But I'm sorry, there are not roving gangs of cartels roaming the streets getting ready to kill you at any given moment. Like, I don't get it. But you know what? As much as I try to keep Twig political free in a lot of ways, this is something that genuinely bothers me. And having a video game marketed as school shooter, this goes all the way back to when Columbine was happening. And they found the Doom levels that Eric Harris and Dylan Keebold, I think I got those names right, created of Columbine High School. And while those were just Doom WAD files, it was a precursor to this. And I wondered when someone was going to do something like this. Truthfully, for years, I was about to say, when are we going to see someone do something where you play as the school shooter sort of thing? And it's fucked up. It truly is. I think a game like this does not deserve to be on the platform. Free speech and art are one thing. And then there's just being a plain asshole. This guy's being an asshole to kind of make it, to profiteer off something like this. And like I said, you have the option to play as a SWAT team member to take down the mass shooter. And I guess you could, there's so many other video game controversies I guess you could draw this in parallel to. Like back when Medal of Honor had the Taliban as a playable side, and then they had to change it to OP4 for opposing force. It's just bad taste, guys. It's truly bad taste. Don't be a dick. There's a right to make art. There's a right to free speech. But for Christ's sakes, think about what you're doing first and foremost. So now I'm going to get off my little pulpit here and hopefully change the conversation to something a little bit more upbeat, if you will. Now, this past week, I had a chance to sit down with Ann Nocetti, who is a former Marvel Comics editor. She's currently one of the curators over at the Museum of Pop Culture in Seattle. And we had a chance to sit down and have an awesome conversation. So sit down, listen to me and Anne rap for a little bit. And when we come back on Twig, we'll take you into the weird news, such as it is. And hopefully we'll have a little bit more fun this week. So anyway, guys, this has been Twig, the flagship of stupidity. We'll be right back, guys, right after this.
And now it's time for another special feature.
Heggle.
Hey guys, what's going on? You're listening to This Week in Geek, and of course, I am your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. And normally, I'd be joined with Alex or Tristan or perhaps even Lee as I do one of these things, but I'm not. I actually have the pleasure of doing this interview, this special piece of content for the show this week, and I'm going to be talking with Ann Nocenti. Now, she is a former Marvel Comics writer and editor. She's also the executive producer of the Marvel Universe of Superheroes exhibit over at the Museum of Pop Culture. Now, this is a name, if you've been following comics since like the 80s, you may recognize. She's created characters like Blackheart, Typhoid Mary, Longshot, Spiral, and one of my favorite bad guys of all time, Mojo, the fat TV evil villain. You may know him from the Fox animated show in the 90s. Yeah, one of the best things they ever did on that show, by the way. So we're going to talk to her about her career, about the women of Marvel, and just all sorts of things because, hey, it's a hip time to be in the comic books and comic book movies. So without any further ado, let's welcome Anne to the show.
Hello. Hi. How are you out there?
I am excited to talk to you because I haven't talked with a Marvel person in so long, and it is such a timely topic right now. And like I said, just kind of going through the press release that I got sent from your assistant, the fact that you created Mojo like is one of my favorite all-time bad guys of all time, and that is just super hype. In fact, you can probably tell I'm trying hard to contain the fanboyism, but I really can't. I'm just excited to talk to you, period.
Thank you. As I was saying earlier, when Trump got elected, I got a lot of fan emails with people saying, Trump is mojo. You know, he controls the media. He blathers away. He's psychotic. And he's got yellow skin. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know.
So you've had quite the history in comics. I mean, like, you've been around since like the early 80s, from what I've been reading. So to kind of give people a background who aren't necessarily super familiar with work, with your work before we jump into things, how did you get started in this industry?
Well, I answered an ad in the classified section of the Village Voice, which said something like, editorial help needed. And here to be his assistant. And back then, you know, it wasn't that difficult to get into Marvel. It wasn't like it is today. So if you were, you know, smart and alive, you know, we used to say, oh, there's a warm body over there. Let's promote them, you know? So you quickly rose to assistant editor and then editor, I think, you know, really quite rapidly. And then I was mentored by great people like Marie Severin was on staff at Marvel when I was there. Louise Simonson, she basically turned me into an editor, the mutant editor. She handed the reins over to me, but she really, she had a fabulous editorial style. Where she got everyone to do what she wanted them to do, and they were always happy to do it. And that was like, I learned her rhythm. And I had Denny O'Neill gave me my first writing assignment. Mark Gruenwald mentored me, got me to kill Spider-Woman, which was kind of a nasty thing to do to me, but, you know, I survived. and so did she. So Marvel Comics back then, you had a kind of a, it was a mentor program, literally just by osmosis. You had Steve Ditko coming into the office and talking. You had Walt Simonson, Frank Miller, Bill Sienkiewicz. Everybody was dropping off their pages, hanging around the office. You had amazing talents like Archie Goodwin, Larry Hama, Mike Carlin, but there were also key females there. You talk about the women in Marvel, Louise Simonson, then you had Joe Duffy over at Epic, and you had Marie Severin. So there were, and then eventually Bobby Chase, who's now over at DC. So we had strong females at Marvel Comics in the 80s.
So now that we kind of got more familiar with like who you're, like who you've had a chance to work with over the years, I want to talk a little bit about some of the characters that you've had a chance to create over the years. One of the characters that you created is one of Daredevil's most iconic characters, was Typhoid Mary, and she's been portrayed in film. You can say that it wasn't the best portrayal, but. We'll say that you've had a chance to see some of your characters come to life over the years. I mean, you've had the Fox animated series bring together some of the Mojoverse characters, and I'm sure some others. What was that like to see your characters translated into another medium? I mean, even with the Netflix series, because you don't know who could show up in Daredevil Season 3, because that's going to happen, I think, later on this year. The Marvel movies are ever expanding, so their bad guy rosters have to expand as well.
Well, I think that even a cursory visit by one of your characters, like, honestly, I was thrilled to see Typhoid Mary in the Daredevil movie. Even, it's odd. It's, even if it's, like, quick, it's still fun. We're getting some glitches. But the other thing that I want to really point out is that it's very difficult to separate the artist from the writer during the creation process. I created, so-called created, plenty of characters that were actually more driven by the artist than me. And I would say, like, characters like Spiral, it was just a, Arthur Adams sent me sheets of monsters and said, which one should we use? And there's a six-armed Spiral, and I go, that one. So a lot of all the characters in Longshot came as much out of Arthur's brain as mine, and the same with Daredevil, John Romita Jr. So the origins of creation, it's very much like a juggling process where you and the artist trade ideas. There are characters in Daredevil that I would actually say John Romita Jr. created. He said, I want a character shotgun, and it was one of the first African-American characters. And early on, and Johnny was like, let's do him. And, you know, so you kind of roll with whatever your artist wants. Sometimes Typhoid Mary obviously was directed more by me, being a female, wanting to look at all the different roles females have and wanting to kind of put them, smush them all together into one person. But she was based on John Romita Jr.'s girlfriend at the time.
Whoa, I didn't know that. That is really cool. So one of the things that you're also responsible for, since you're the executive producer of this exhibit over at the Museum of Pop Culture, can you tell me more about the Marvel Universe of Superheroes? What is that?
Well, there are four executive producers. Christoph Schultz is the main executive producer. It was his idea, his inspiration. Disney called him and said, hey, you want to do a Marvel show? And he's done a lot of touring exhibitions. And I had worked with Christoph on a street art exhibit, a wonderful exhibit called Magic City in Germany. And David Mandel is a executive producer on the show. He very generously loaned a lot of pieces from his private collection. And Brian Crosby of Marvel Entertainment. So there was like a whole team of us working together with these fabulous curators. So Ben Saunders, who's with the University of Oregon, he kind of did the heavy lifting in terms of this is what we've got to have in the show, this is how deep the show should go. So we have everything. You walk into the museum and you can have an amazing stealthy opportunity if you go into Doctor Strange's Infinity Room, which is absolutely fabulous. It's made of a hall of mirrors and it uses animated Steve Ditko art. You can go over to Jack Kirby's drawing table. You can see Black Panther costumes, but you can also go deep. You can see very key original art pieces. Ben Sanders managed to get the very first appearance of Spider-Man from the Library of Congress. The very first time he put on his costume and tried his web shooter, he's got the very first appearance of Falcon, of Submariner, and that artwork, to look at it, is so delicate and so beautiful, and you can see the marginalia, you can see scribbled notes on the side, you can see the process of penciling to inking. So we've got spectacular original art, and we've got these wild build-out installations, and then you can go really deep in the infographics and go, hey, how do you make a comic? Hey, who are some of the other creators? And honestly, you can spend hours in there.
That's incredibly cool. Like, just being able to hear that there's some of this original art, because I know some of it ends up in the so-called ash can, just gets tossed out. But just the fact that you have these original pages there, that's so incredibly cool. When you started talking about Spider-Man there, I had a replica of Amazing Fantasy 15 out of like an action figure from like 20 years ago. And I knew exactly what panel you were talking about. And that's just the thing that you have that. That's so cool.
We have from on loan from the Library of Congress, but David Mandel also loaned us four original pages: The Death of Elektra, Frank Miller's Death of Elektra, the Bullseye pages.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
It's like seminal. And Bill Sienkiewicz, when I was an editor at Marvel Comics and I was responsible for the X-Men and the mutant line, Bill was doing these painted covers. And one day he brought in this giant thing that was covered with like radio parts and computer parts. And I always, you know, thought, I had no idea what happened to that amazing piece of art. And when I heard that David Mandel not only owned it, but was going to loan it to our show, I mean, believe me, I was tearing up when I saw it.
That's just incredible to think that you have access for this particular exhibit to so many of these pieces of comic book history, and people are going to get a chance to see this stuff. That's really incredible that only people like yourself and other industry insiders get a chance to view with, like, oh, that's something we did back then, but now people who've been fans of this for 20, 30 years get a chance to view it, and like a real piece of comic book history. That's really awesome just to hear that you guys have
such a
powerful exhibit.
The other thing I think about that piece in particular is that I think comic fans, when they see it, will go, this really was a game changer. This piece of artwork brought together, you know, Bill Sienkiewicz's, all his different influences, be it like Bob Peak or, you know, Ralph Steadman, Neil Adams. It brought all his influences together, and he went nuts with making it a piece of collage art. And everyone looked at the work he was putting out at that time and went, wait a minute, comics, you know, comics can really be expansive. And when you're a fan and you go through the show and you go through all the kind of gorgeous traditional Kirby and Ditko art, and then you arrive at Bill Sienkiewicz's piece, it's quite startling.
Now, one question I'd like to ask you, specifically because you have this insight, what is it like seeing new people come in the comics now, specifically since the MCU over the last 10 years has really opened up comics more into the mainstream than they've ever been? Like, I've got friends who run comic book stores, and they'd be like, since Marvel hit it big with Iron Man back in 2008, people are starting to come in, people are starting to buy again, people are buying not just brick and mortar, but they're buying digital, they're going back and rediscovering these characters and arcs throughout these old books. What's it like to see people get excited about comics again? Because I can't think of a time where, outside of the 90s, where people were super hot for it, and now it's like that again. To me, at least, a lot of my friends are super back into comics again.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the problems with the industry, you know, came from us creators ourselves. I mean, the comics that were produced in the 90s, there was a drop off on quality. The 80s were an incredibly exciting time. It was like Walt Simonson calls it the second golden age of comics. And, you know, there were independent and mainstream publishers and Vertigo over at DC that were really expanding what it was to, you know, make a comic. And the 90s, there was a drop-off, I think, in quality. And what shocked me was that, I think it was maybe 2011, something like that, I was invited to Emerald City, Emerald City Con. And, you know, because I was writing Green Arrow, and that's his, like, thing, is Emerald City. So I went to that con, and it was the first time that I saw the convention floor with as many women as men. So for me, seeing all the women not only reading and enjoying, but making comics, that's just phenomenal for me. You know, Sana Aminette, I'm probably going to pronounce her name wrong, G. Willow Wilson, Amy Reeder with Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. You've got, like, I'm going to say her name wrong too, Sarah Pincelli, the Mike Morales. It's like, you have, like, these amazing female creators right now, and I'm reading their comics, and I'm, like, overwhelmed at how good they are.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been one thing just to see all these powerful women come out in comics. I mean, one of the people I follow on Twitter is Gail Simone, and I love just reading her tweets because they're always insightful.
Oh, yeah.
They're always funny anyway.
She's a huge talent, and I think I have, you know, a shout out always has to go to Kelly Sue DeConnick, because she has pretty much single-handedly brought so many female readers into the industry with her Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, her Carol Core, I mean, she's also amazing. I'm kind of like the older generation. I can look and admire all this stuff, but there are women that are out there on the forefront advocating for females to be reading and making comics.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one thing that I'm noticing amongst some of my friends that they're starting to get in the comics that are women. I have a friend of mine named Lacey. She's very, very, she was like, oh, I thought this was kind of a boy thing, but now she's reading some of the licensed properties that she's into, like, say, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I had a bunch of trades and she bought them off me. And now I'm like, hey, why don't you check out this comic? And you might get into that. My wife, Blair, was traditionally not a comic book reader, but I'm like, hey, you might like X. And she's like, okay, I'll give this a whirl. And now she has a very small digital collection on my iPad, which is really cool. Just the fact that there's more females coming into the industry than ever before, I think is, it's an exciting time to be a comic book fan, whether you're male or female. And now there's more prominent roles in film and television.
One of the things we hope the show would do, because you enter the show and you see an old newsstand and then you see like great photos of people reading comics back in the day, and then you see a kind of introductory movie, and then you get immersed in this world where, honestly, if I was entering the world of comics, I would have no idea what to read. There's so much stuff. I wouldn't know what to read. So, but one of the things the show does is steer you towards, like, what is it that you resonates with you? You know, is it Runaways because, you know, you feel like your parents are not who they think that you think they are? Is it, you know, mutants because you feel like you can relate to being marginalized? Like, you can say, hey, this is what appeals to me, and try one copy of something. And then my gateway comic was Love and Rockets.
I'm trying to think back what was my gateway comic. I mean, I think back to, my parents gave me Archie comics, and I remember some What If comics that I got given, because, man, that's a series that needs to come back in a bad way. One series that my wife got into because of the Netflix series was Jessica Jones.
Because fabulous show.
And she's like, wow, this is really cool. And I'm like, this is superheroes. I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't have to be the world's going to end because Galactus is going to eat it. It's more simple superheroes. Yeah. And she's like, I like this. This is more my speed. And it's exciting to see my wife get into these things. Now she's into the Defenders. She's reading older Daredevil arcs, stuff like that. It's really cool just to see how the world has expanded.
Well, I also Luke Cage is a phenomenal TV show for how it brings kind of Harlem into the show. And for, you say you are a Luke Cage fan, you can go to the show and you can say, oh my God, there's the hoodie, you know, there's the bullet ridden hoodie, you know. So, you know, and then you go into the final room where there are comics and you can pick up a comic and say, gee, what's going on in Luke Cage now?
That's got to be something. So, Anne, if people wanted to visit the Museum of Pop Culture, where would they have to go?
You would have to go to Seattle. It's the MoPop. It's a pop culture museum that was it's a Frank Gehry designed museum, and it was originally designed to be Jimi Hendrix and a rock and roll museum. So it's a fabulous museum because you've got this, like, literally a tornado of guitars. You can walk into the Jimi Hendrix room and look at his passport and read his, like, notes. And there's a horror show. There's all these different shows. So you can go to MoPop and see all kinds of stuff and then go into the Marvel show.
I got to say, Anne, if I ever get a chance to make it out to Seattle, I most certainly hope that I'll get a chance to rather soon. So, guys, if you live in the Seattle area, I really hope you guys will go check out the Museum of Pop Culture. Check out this fantastic exhibit. It sounds, if you're a Marvel fan, you got to go. There is no argument here. You got to go. So, Anne, I want to thank you for spending your time with us today on This Week in Geek. It has been a fantastic time. I've learned a lot. And I got to say, you've made me excited for comics in a way that I haven't been in quite some time. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All right, guys, that was my interview with Anne Nocetti. You, like I said, please go check out this exhibit. It sounds ultimately, frankly, fucking cool. You have to go. So if you guys happen to go, take pictures and email it to us, feedback@thisweekingeek.net. I want to see pictures, especially if you live in the Seattle area or if you have plans to visit, go check it out. Anyway, guys, I'm going to throw things back to me, Alex, Tristan, and whoever else decides to join us this week. I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, and we'll be back right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
You seem to be very unfamiliar with your web shooter settings. Would you like to run a refresher course?
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Thank you so much to Anne for having a chance to sit down and talk with me this past week. It has been honestly one of the funnest conversations I've had in quite some time on this show. So please go check out the Museum of Pop Culture. I'm pretty sure you can find that in Seattle. Okay, so let's talk about the weird, the wonderful, the just plain screwed up here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity. And we're going to talk about this guy. This fucking guy. We're going to be talking about Michael Rotondo. This is a name you might have heard recently in the news as the 30-year-old who will not leave his parents out, or as Alex calls him, King Millennial. Right now. So a little bit of background to the story. So this guy's been living at home for about the past 8 years after holding down a job at Best Buy. And he's had, I guess, what you might call a failure to launch. He hasn't had the most successful life, though evidently he has a kid. And his parents finally had said, you know what, enough is enough. After offering to help him find a job, help him get on his feet, give him a little bit of money to get his own apartment and whatnot. So even after all this, his parents took him to court. And a judge has ruled in favor of an eviction order. And their son, Michael Rotondo, is not happy about it. So Michael Rotondo appeared in the Supreme Court of New York State for about 30 minutes on Tuesday morning after a petition had been filed by his parents, Christina and Mark Rotondo, stating they wanted their son to leave. After debating with the judge in a back and forth, Rotondo arguing he was entitled to 6 months more time, a common law requirement that family members must give a 6-month notice before eviction. The judge countering that an appellate court decision ruling family members don't get special treatment, Judge Donald Greenwood made his decision. It was a decision Rotondo called outrageous. I don't see why the judge wants to throw people on the street, he said. So basically what had happened is some of these letters that the parents wrote to their son say is, after a discussion with your mother, we decided you must vacate this house immediately. You have 14 days to vacate. You will not be allowed to return. We will take whatever actions are necessary to enforce this decision. You are hereby evicted from the address where these people live. You have been our guest, and there is no lease or agreement that gives you any right to stay here without our consent. On the advice of our lawyer, we've given you up to 30 days from the date shown above to take your possessions and vacate the premises. And this would go on where they'd offer, like, okay, look, we'll give you $1,100 to help you stay, to help you get set up. We'll help you look for an apartment. We'll help you look for a job. Like the mother was offering to help out. We also want you to take your car off the property. If you cannot move the car, we'll pay for its removal. We'll help pay for its repair. Just GTFO, get the fuck out of here. And this guy went on a press tour for whatever reason. He talked to CNN, TMZ, whoever would talk to this guy. He went out and basically was like, oh, well, blah, 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 I'm trying to do this. And the reason he said he couldn't find a job, he couldn't get his shit together, is he was trying to get back custody of his son, which was rightfully revoked. in this case, because I'm pretty sure this guy can't balance a checkbook. He should be responsible for a human life. And just, holy shit, what an asshole. I mean, I can understand, I mean, going out in the world and getting your ass handed to you. I mean, I've gone through similar experiences where I'd gone out, once again, young Birdman's in love, goes to the far corners of Canada, and it turns to shit quite quickly, and I have to come crawling home with my tail between my legs. I'm sorry, not every romantic tale necessarily ends in marriage and the prince living happily, the prince and the princess living happily ever after. Sometimes it just plain sucks. This is one instance where it just plain sucks. But this guy, this fucking guy, he's not stupid, because he went to school for engineering, then he changed his major to business, dropped out, but he's not stupid. He's just lazy. Like, Christ almighty. How stupid do you gotta be? Like, your parents are taking you to court at that point. Man, maybe it's time you go to your friend and say, hey, look, dude, I'm in some shit here. Can I surf on your couch while I find a job? Or, you know, if he finished school, say, look, mom, dad, I need a little help till I can get my shit together. And this guy clearly didn't get his shit together. So I don't want this dude out on the street, because that's the last thing we need, is to increase the homeless problem. But at the same time, there's that air of personal responsibility. As I said in my previous story, don't be an asshole. Stop being an asshole, for Christ's sakes. Your parents want to help you. I'm sure your parents love you very much. But there is a time, a place, and a limit on that where you can take advantage of it. And this is clearly an example of this. And I very much side with the judge, mostly because Mr. Rocket Scientist here decided to represent himself in court to argue with a judge. I'm thinking, okay, he knows what he's talking about. You're a guy whose Google foo may be strong, but you're not going to beat the legal system on friggin' Google, of all things. So, obviously, now, this whole thing has kind of been settled, and I think the parents are giving him another 3 months. So, what's the end of the story? I don't know. I'm sure this isn't the last we'll hear of Mr. Rotundo. So, moving on to my next story, which is equally stupid, although much funnier in a way. So earlier this week, it was reported that there was a power outage, and there's a public alert system in Florida. If you might remember earlier this year, there was an accidental missile alert sent out to Hawaii, and people were freaking out, or stuff like that. So what happened in the city of Lake Worth in Florida is last Sunday, there was a quote-unquote zombie alert. And I'm going to read you the exact alert. Power outage and zombie alert for residents of Lake Worth and Terminus. There are now far less than 7,380 customers involved due to extreme zombie activity. Restoration time uncertain. Now it seems that this is likely a joke or a hack, as Terminus is a location in The Walking Dead, I think season 5, I want to say. So the public information officer, Ben Kerr, told Gizmodo, where I picked up the story, we first became aware of the zombie messages during Hurricane Irma. He doesn't know how the culprit got into the system and changed the messages, but the city noticed during August 2017 hurricane, because many zombie-tainted outage messages were going out. At the time, the city was able to attend the message issues before the public noticed. There are thousands of pre-programmed messages that the system is supposed to send out, and this isn't a case of, like, when Hawaii, the UI was just designed like garbage, and it could accidentally happen. No, somebody went into the system, changed the messages. And this always makes you think of that meme where you see the road sign that says, caution, zombies ahead. Kerr goes on to explain, the actual power systems were not in any way compromised. This is a separate messaging system that at some point has been compromised. They just added a zombie fantasy to it. Kerr says the city is investigating the prank and has finally scrubbed all zombie messages from the system. He says, hopefully the next time there's a zombie invasion alert, it will be a real zombie invasion. Obviously not the situational outcome I would prefer, but that is kind of funny that someone was like, oh shit, we got zombies, what the hell are we gonna do? Where's fucking Rick Grimes and friggin' Ash from Evil Dead to come save us? So, obviously, public infrastructure being very, very vulnerable to hacking and everything. That's a worry, that they could send out false alerts and whatnot, but at least they did it with a cheeky bit of fun. Like, oh, there's a power outage, and by the way, there's the undead. So, should the undead actually rise, I'm pretty sure it will be a little less stupid than this. And because if you might remember, the CDC has a quote-unquote zombie plan, though it's more meant as a tongue-in-cheek joke for hurricane and other emergency preparedness, like how to walk through the steps of getting ready for something. So that's what I got in the weird news this week. So hopefully you've had a chance to enjoy some of these weird stories. Once again, if you find any weird stories of your own, I definitely would love to hear from you. So feedback at thisweekingeek.net or our voicemail line, 817-717-7202. Definitely want to hear from you. We're going to throw things over to Satan's Pantry and a review from Alex. So we'll be back right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity. We'll be back right here on thisweekingeek.net.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig! It's inedible!
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry as we decide to travel down the most vile aisle in your local grocery store, or perhaps local Walmart, if you will. In today's show, we're going to be trying something, as I hinted at last week, my nuts. We're going to be trying Tasty Nuts from Halderham's confectionery, I think, or Nagapur. It's called the Taste of Tradition. So these are spicy coated fried peanuts, product of India. So bag is now open. Gonna take a big whiff.
Full disclosure, that is another thing that I've had before.
It smells okay. It kind of smells like nuts. A bulk barn. So I'll take a
better bowl. Better than like a real barn.
I got a handful.
We're eating horse poo. See, if it tastes like a bulk barn, I think it's gonna take like those deli chips.
We've made the comparison to Bulk Barn before, and it turned out okay.
Yeah, it wasn't totally ass.
Those are the Band-Aid chips, though.
No, they weren't. They were the Adeli-style chips.
Band-Aid chips for something
smell
else.
Smell like peanuts.
That Band-Aid chips for the Haggis chips.
Yeah, that does. It just smells like coated peanuts.
So, I'm going to try one.
There you go. Ooh, I have a cluster. I have a cluster.
They're basically, oh, wow, that aftertaste hits. It's peanutty really, really at first, and then the aftertaste kicks you. It's not terrible. It's really hot, but not wasabi hot.
You know, if you've had from Picard's Peanuts, I think they were the first
ones to make tandoori,
the chip nuts.
Yeah, oh. yeah, that's
but,
it.
But instead of chip nut coating, it's the coating. If you've gone down the international food aisle and you see like the Indian foods, they have all those weird trail mix things where they have all these...
Yeah,
they're wheat based like sticks and weird shapes. It's that powdering on the outside of this that's the coating instead of like a chip. So it's not potato; it's probably a wheat covering.
It's a wheat covering, definitely.
Very
salty.
Oh yeah,
definitely peanut in the middle. And
I have a cat running on me.
It's really, really tasty. I don't know.
But the heat gets you. Holy shit!
Yeah, that comes on. And it grows fast. It's good. Maybe a 3 on my heat meter.
I'd say so.
This is a 2 or 3.
And that's a 10 for me, really. Like, so that's low.
But California Reaper peanuts are 10.
How much delay there is between actually starting to eat it before the heat actually kicks
in. I used to make a dip that I called the smoke grenade. Because it had a time delay. And it had a really smoky flavor afterwards. This kind of has that same sort of delay.
It's not too bad. It's burning the front left of my tongue, not the back or the throat.
That's right on the top.
But it's not like I'm burning your throat on the way down taste.
No.
Yeah,
that was enjoyable.
This is a pleasant burn, but it stays on your tongue.
This is like if you had
a very flavorful burn.
Bowl on a table with a bunch of mixed things, like let's say some M&Ms and some other stuff. you could pour one of these in to mix it in to spice it up.
I'd be down with that.
Without making it too hot.
Yeah, that's what I like. Is it spicy, but it's not just generic, like, spicy. It's
yeah.
It's really,
it
really
tastes
spicy.
It really tastes like India.
It tastes better than like a Tex-Mex.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know when you get them from Walmart, they have those mixes? It's a better heat than that.
And yeah. The quality of the nut itself was actually really good. I was actually really surprised. These are like almost Picard peanuts good, actually.
Almost.
So, yeah, if you want to try these tasty nuts, be on the lookout. I think they're in Walmart right now.
Well, a lot of I've seen those at international. So, like, the Loblaws, No Frills, your basic grocery stores carry them, too.
Yeah, honestly, I would recommend them.
We have a winner.
So we'll be back next week on Satan's Pantry with I'm not quite sure what disgusting or hot or even potentially good thing we're going to try. But keep it tuned to Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
You're shit!
Yes, Chef, I am.
You are so shit, it's unbelievable.
Alex here to talk about Shantae Half Genie Hero, brought to you by WayForward Technologies, WayForward Studios, and Exceed Games. Published on the PS4. Now, it's on multi-platform, but the version I was able to check out was on the PS4 Pro that I have. And it's certainly an interesting game. It's one of the best platformers I've played in years. Like, we're talking up there, as far as enjoyment-wise, as the new Mario game and Kirby on the Switch. Now, it is a sort of, it's a side-scrolling, vertical platformer in your classic vein of a la the Super Nintendo era, but with much more spiffy graphics and cool dancing powers to be had. I played through pretty much all of it in one or two playthroughs because I was so engrossed with it that I had to keep playing. Now, this has been out for a little bit, but this is the Ultimate Edition that includes all of the DLC, as well as extra packs, extra updates, and everything all into one package. And you get a lot for your money with this. It's definitely worth checking it out for people that want to keep diving in and going and playing more as more different characters as different modes in general. Like, there are ones where if you die, you're dead permanently. There's all these other modes you can play in the game, and I'm not going to dive into every single one of them because it's just monotonous. There's so much to this. This is awesome. Now, the controls in Shantae are fairly simple. You know, you run left, right, jump, attack, as well as the dancing mechanism, which allows you to use different genie spells to turn into other creatures or other characters that let you move around. So, for instance, you can turn into a little creature that allows you to cling to walls and then jump across larger areas that you couldn't normally get to. And all along the way, you're beating little worlds, a la like a Mario World type thing, where you move from section to section on a world map. And the enemies are pretty tough, but fair, like once you learn the patterns of where they move, and it allows for re-exploration because there's certain areas that you can get to that you couldn't before when you've accomplished something like getting a new character that you can turn into. The boss battles are very interesting. For example, the first major boss battle in the first world is a pirate ship that you're taking on, and it's fairly easy once you figure out the pattern because, of course, it's a first boss, but it fires cannonballs at you as well as little blunderbuss shots, and you have to ring a bell and then go up, grab a barrel, and smack it so that it goes into the ship itself, and then that damages the ship and changes its pattern up slightly. And you rinse, repeat, your standard platformer action play, but it's still super fun because there is the element of surprise in that you can die fairly quickly if you get caught in this, because you get a few hearts as you go throughout the game, and you can gain more hearts and sort of level up your character a little bit. But the main meat and potatoes of this game is the plain platforming. So scaling things, finding new ways to get around things. It's just simply very, very fun. The music is perfect for it. The little bit of voice acting that's in it is pretty good. It's not completely voice acted, but a lot of sections have little bits and pieces added into it. And it just has a really good visual presentation. I would say definitely check it out. It's available pretty much on every platform, you know, on Windows, PS4. It's available on the Switch. It's available on Xbox One. I played it on the PS4. I can't say how it plays on the others, but it was buttery smooth playing it at 4K. So I'd say check it out right now.
And that has been our show this week. Once again, we will hopefully have Tristan and Alex back in the fold next week. And you know what? Those guys deserve a break. But hey, I am the captain of this ship of fools, and I must steer us into the sea of stupidity. And that's just how we run things here on Twig. So hopefully you've had a chance to basically enjoy the show as we've had a chance to do this over the last couple of months. A lot of things coming up on the site this week. I should be joining Admiral Stephen Phillips talking Star Trek Future Imperfect, talking about maybe some of the movie deals, and he wants to talk about Star Trek Online. I don't get it, but hey, he loves it. I'll talk about it. That's how we roll. I'll also be back on Altered Geek this week, as far as I know, because I know one story I wanted to talk about this week, but I wanted people like Alex and Tristan to bounce off of, is I really wanted to talk about Thundercats Roar. And you might be surprised by my response to it. So anyway, we're going to talk about that. We will obviously have something. Actually, there's something very cool coming up on Terrible Warriors. Justin Eacock, the producer over there, interviewed Alex and me. And look for that interview on Tuesday on TerribleWarriors.com, where we talk about the Cambridge Chronicles, what's coming up, and all sorts of excitement there. Also, if you check out the feed for the Cambridge Chronicles itself, I'm pretty sure our roadmap episode has gone live, where we go into a little bit more detail about what we're planning for season two of the show. So be sure to be stay tuned for that. We're always looking forward to talk about role play games and whatnot. I think Alex should have another Turd or Treasure coming up later on this week, if I'm not mistaken. So be looking for that. I guess I'm going to go play State of Decay. And I'm also watching Luke Cage season two already. And I should have a review up for that. I'm also probably going to do a little bit of a review on Netflix's The Toys That Made Us as well. So I'll be looking out for that. So anyway, guys, until next time, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live free or die hard. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. And I'll catch you right here next time on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
Hey, kids, that's enough for one night, eh?
You know, I don't think this show is suitable for children.
I don't think this show is suitable for anybody.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear something like this.
Insert a clip here, you dick.
Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content. And subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at thisweekingeek. And check out our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. If you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
We now join America's most popular show already in progress. Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.